remember today is that day where people want to, they want us to finish early so that they can catch their flight. And it will be wrong of us to keep people here and not allow them to go home, you know, break away, go home and rest and come back again on Monday, having rested, you know. Remember, it's a working day. So that's how. Okay, thank you very much. I can see, we do form a quorum, am I right? Or the Zoom is alright. Shall we? Okay, yeah. FFC is here. Please feel free to help yourself at the back, even whilst, you know, in the course of the meeting. And I believe, and I'm reliably informed that you all have a copy of the agenda for today's meeting. Agreed? So you all have. Yes. Shall we then start with the opening? Shall we close our eyes and observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation? Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to the National Health Delegation, and indeed we feel privileged to have you to be with you for the 3 days. Indeed, your being here to us is a value add to our work. We really DG, I'm acknowledging and thanking you for your presence. Thank you very much. And then, good morning to all civil society representatives. Thank you so much for showing interest. Indeed, it makes us to qualify in terms of how we should do our work involving the general public as well. And good morning to the staff. I don't want to just say the staff. Good morning to the hard-working staff, and thank you so much for ensuring that these meetings set, starting from the first meeting to today, and also startup preparations. And this meeting, I think the 3 days meeting has been a success because of your hard work. Thank you so much. And just keep up the good work. And good morning to all guests. We indeed wish to welcome you all to the joint meeting of the Standing Committee on Appropriations and the Portfolio Committee on Health. Firstly, we wish to really thank the honorable members for their commitment and full participation in discussions in the past 2 days. We also thank our invited stakeholders and our support staff who have been with us for the past 2 days. Indeed, I am convinced that we have spent quality time in this meeting. And indeed, this exercise will come out with quality outcomes. Today we will receive a briefing from the Financial and Fiscal Commission, which is a valued and important partner to both committees. After deliberation to the FFC, the committees will chart a way forward on this important issue of quality health care for all, because that was the main aim, quality health care, as the provinces aligning their programs with the national health goals and the national health department's programs. I am again looking forward to useful engagement, and feel free, this is our meeting, and let's have a constructive and robust discussions. Thank you very much. We'll now move on to, let's do the introductions if there are new people here, or do we all, are we all familiar with the FFC members? And you never know, maybe we now have a full-time chairperson there, so maybe let's allow introductions by FFC, and then we will then move on to apologies. Over to you, FFC.
Good morning, chairperson and honorable members. Unfortunately, we are still awaiting the signing off on who should be the chairperson of the FSC. For now, I'm still the acting chair. You'll probably only see another acting chair if we don't get a decision before the end of this month, hopefully before the end of the financial year. We will hear from the president, who's the new chairperson. Chair, with me, I've got Eddie Khadebe, who's our fiscal policy manager, and Khalid Dawood on my left-hand side, who's our program manager for budgets, and then now all the members of honourable members know Henry Eckstein, who's our parliamentary office, so in our Cape Town office. Chair, what we'll do is that I'll do the introductory part, and then I'm going to hand over to Eddie to do the presentation. I guess from what I've heard yesterday and also what I saw on TV last night till quite late, beyond your upper six closing time, what I saw on TV or pro the session, it seems that there are a number of questions that are being raised around health outcomes to policy decisions that's been made, but also to infrastructure in districts, the whole system of health care. Delivery, including the financial and fiscal options steward. There were issues, and hopefully we will be able to address it. There were issues related to the impact of the fiscal consolidation and austerity measures that have been implemented relative to the spending levels and the ceilings that has been given to health in particular, but also as it happens in provinces. Hopefully we will be able to reflect on it. If not, then I think it's worth your two committees to ask us furthermore on these questions. The only thing that we can do is shed light on it and give you some advisory notes on what to do, and that's essentially what our role and responsibility is. Well, that at the backdrop, we will talk to you about the healthcare performance and the economy, health and intergovernmental fiscal relations system, and we'll delve into a departmental budget analysis and try to shed some light on that. What we've seen is there's been very positive health outcomes if you measure us back to the years 2005. Our life expectancy has substantively increased over the last 7 years. It used to be around 52, 53 life expectancy for South African citizens. So what one could say with a combination of health inputs but also other developments within our South African setting, our life expectancy is now around 57, especially measured in the years 2013. Our infant mortality has substantively dropped.
I'm concerned for the interruption. Do you
Thank you, Chair. So our mortality rate has also substantively improved, and we see that there's a drop from around at the midpoint of between 70 and 80 to around 40. So we're doing fairly well with regard to the measuring against the MDG goals as a country. And I think for that it suggests that things have turned around in terms of the government's policy and at a growth at a particular level in terms of our economy and that. But also how people have substantively started to invest in their own well-being. If you look at those targets, you'll see that the NDP targets acknowledge the huge health challenges facing the country, and that achieving the key health indicators will take longer than initially predicted. So if you look at the health indicator, you'll see that the MDG goals for 2015 was a 38 out of 1,000. Sustainable goals has now shifted very substantially to 70 out of 100,000. The NDP gives 100 out of 100,000. And South Africa, we currently are at 197. That was in the year 2011 out of the 100. But moreover, as I've mentioned, that the life expectancy is around 70 years. The sustainable development goals has not indicated what life expectancy ought to be. The NDP has projected that life expectancy would be around 70 years in the year to 2030. As I've mentioned, we're now around 57 years measured in 2013. So the main challenges in the health sector, and specifically regarding a recent study on the efficiency of primary health care provision, the Finance and Fiscal Commission identified the following main challenges in the health sector. Suboptimal quality of care, the health disease burden, input cost pressures, and clearly that's the whole question around the fiscal consolidation of the plan, but it's also a matter of reprioritization to waste where it exists in certain places of the healthcare system. With that said, I think there's been some, over the years, a good sense of how the health department in particular, the national one, has through its ministers, has tried to reconstruct, if you like, the healthcare delivery system. Because remember, what South Africa has inherited was, depending who you talk to, either 14 or 16 health systems, health departments or health systems, measured by departments. And essentially the dominant one used to be the White Health System, but obviously measured in terms of the number of inputs that's gone into it, financial inputs in particular, but also the construction of hospitals and the way healthcare has expanded for the historically the white population. And as such, we in many ways did the hotspots of putting all these different administrations together, and then we expected these administrations to deliver at the time 46 million people. So there are lots of structural, functional, operational, financing, the dual financing of the system. In fact, triple financing of the system through private, public, and out-of-pocket NGO funding. So there's been a lot of trying to pull the system together so that it actually speaks to, in particular, the constitutional obligations of the state to provide health as a public good. But even health as a public good has been contested. So the point I'm making is that somebody raised, I think one of the honorable members raised something about Well, Joseph Stiglitz has said, and somebody raised the whole question about the importance of remembering history. The point is that history can only help us to understand where we are. But it's important to be able to see exactly how do we deal with changing the whole construction, configuration, system of how that will actually deliver on the one hand on peace, people's basic human rights. On the other hand, have a definitive invention into the longevity of South African society and health of people, because only healthy people will be able to be active in the economy. So there's a number of things that depending on how you look at it, that are sub-facilitators to building a solid healthcare system, but there are others that can serve as impediments to the health system. And hence, we want to bring to your attention that we are seeing a growing uninsured population. Many of you honorable chairs will know that. And it's also one of those debates that they're currently having in the States, that people don't easily buy insurance. It only struck us when we get to my age, then insurance becomes a serious concern. But also, in a South African setting, there's not a lot of money going around in terms of people's income because of the unemployment rate. So we're looking forward to see how the National Heart Insurance Scheme is gonna look going forward, because in many ways that in itself will impact on the intergovernmental fiscal arrangements and how we actually finance public health as a country. The private sector only serves 70% of the 17% rather of the population, and imbalances of spending have skewed the distribution of services. You are very much aware that inputs into private healthcare are relatively high compared to the public sector. But also the public sector healthcare system is responsible for everybody. And as a result, there are issues of inequitable distribution that's going on inside provinces, inside districts, but across the country. And our view is that equitable share in many ways cannot be the measure to determine how resources get equitably distributed, given that when the share gets allocated, it becomes a provincial government decision as to how the funds get distributed. That's the politics of our political of our system in terms of the intergovernmental arrangements. So it's only when there are conditional grants and there's a strong hand of the national government on it. We also of the view that wasteful expenditure and inefficiencies in the system are also one of those challenges that needs to be addressed, and one of the things that has always been in the minds of the public is the long average waiting times at our healthcare facilities. The Department of Health, through its programs, has taken steps to address many of these challenges, although uneven implementation at the provincial level is a key area that could require further attention. So the reason why we're making that point is that we need to be able to start looking at what are the standards of measure for implementation of the range of programs across the province, especially national health programs, through its policies. And how do we find ways to add on additional rigidities in the autonomy and independence of provinces to make certain decisions in healthcare provision. And the reason why I'm raising that, and it's not necessarily a popular view, is that when things go wrong in districts, in communities, in provinces, people look at national governments. They don't look at the provinces or municipalities. They want national government intervention. And because health is one of our basic rights within our Chapter 2 of our Constitution, it is inevitable that health as a right would continuously be pushed. So there's a need to on the one hand, think about putting the politics aside of the system. And I'm not talking party politics, so if you want to come back to that, I'm not talking party politics. But to put the politics aside and actually look at what are the appropriate measures that will ensure that there's requisite investments in health by provincial governments relative to the needs and demands of health care requirements within a particular a province. So on the one hand, that's for us quite a critical phenomenon, but it hinges us back to how do we organize the health system going forward? And given the NHI impact it will have, to make sure that healthcare services are appropriately delivered to citizens in the different provinces. So with that, I want to hand over to Elie Gadebe to take us through. Sometimes it's Radebe, sometimes it's Gadebe, so you make the choice.
Thanks, Commissioner. Honorable Chair and honorable members, I'm going to take you through the section started with the section that deals with the healthcare delivery and intergovernmental fiscal relations, as we have received a specific request from the committee. Just as a start, I think picking on what the commissioners have just spoken, our starting point here is that, I mean, it's just a reminder, obviously, because this is a common knowledge, is that health is a concurrent function between the three tiers of government. And under normal systems of an IGR, national government is supposed to implement policies and the sub-national government, which is the provinces and municipalities, are supposed to implement. But in our case, we also find in instances where national government actually implement the actual policies, and to some extent, this tends to undermine the system of decentralization. Well, of course, the National Health Act, which defines the roles and responsibilities which are allocated to each sphere, and to that extent, I think we can almost say there's certainty around what roles and responsibilities should be played by each sphere of government. But sometimes, as I just said, is that there is an overreach, and where you find that there is implementation at both at national level and at provincial level. And this creates it's the nature of concurrency, but it creates coordination and implementation challenges at the lower level because of this concurrent division of responsibilities, which the system and our system obviously have got mechanisms which have been put in place to address coordination, but in some instances we find that those mechanisms are not sufficient to address the challenges which I would mention in the following slide. Now, the other thing that we note is that placement of health facilities in various spheres often create coordination problems. And here I'll speak to the long-standing problem around decentralization of funding to the lowest level of delivery. We've had an argument for a very long time around the need to devolve funding to the hospitals and also to the district offices, and to a certain extent it happens through delegation. But our view is that we need full delegation of responsibility to the hospital, because when the decisions are taken at the level at which these services are delivered, there tends to be alignment between the needs at the community level and what the facilities offer. We often find there's also problems around the indicative health facility budgets, which are being created at the provincial level, because as a hospital facility, it's not always very clear that the indicative health budget, which is indicated by the provinces, will always be spent in a particular health facility, especially when there is a pressure in one hospital relative to the other. So, by decentralizing the budget to the health facilities, you enable the hospital CEOs to take control of their entire budget and also respond quickly to the needs which arises in those hospitals. And as we have seen in some of the presentations that were made, even by the DG, I think there's also indication that there's some infrastructure problems within some of these and maintenance problems in some of these health facilities, which are not being responded to as quickly as possible. And part of the problem can be attributed to the decentralization problem. Well, we've also seen in some past years where there has been problem with reinvestment for services to be rendered to the provinces, especially by your entities like NHLS and health pathology services. But what seems to happen is that when there are this problem, the solution we tend to resort to is to shift a function from one sphere to the other instead of fixing the underlying problem why the provinces are not paying for such services rendered, especially auxiliary services. So that's one of the issues that we've noted within the which you note as a problem within the current health delivery architecture. Now, just to touch on briefly on some of the IGR issues, which we consider to be very important, and perhaps maybe the members should be pay attention to. As I mentioned, is that coordinated planning within and across spheres, and health coordination between provinces and the health entities remain a big issue, which also needs to be looked at. Decentralization of funding to hospitals, as I mentioned. I mean, the example here which we want to give here is that in the education sector, funding has been decentralized to the school level, and we find that to have been very effective, because now the schools are able to take decisions about what to buy and when to buy. There are problems here and there about some schools obviously not mismanaging the funding allocation, but overall the impact and the implication is that has had a very positive effect on schooling outcomes overall. There's also an issue of around alignment of health facility. Alignment of health facility allocation to health needs, as well as plan and priorities. And this alignment happens much better when planning and the funding is allocated to the facilities at which the services are delivered. Because as a national government or as a province, it's not always possible to address the specific healthcare needs of the various health communities. But we think that when the budgets are allocated to these facilities, that alignment would be much better. The other issue that we also note as a big concern is the issue of multiple grant funding streams for same budget aligned items. For instance, what we find is that in the conditional grants, we have a number of conditional grants which have got an infrastructure element in them. And what we notice as a concern there is that if you create multiple funding streams to allocate the same budget line item, it creates coordination problem, because now provinces have to figure out around what element of infrastructure conditional grant should we be using to address city infrastructure problems within the hospital. When instead the budget should be consolidated and be used to treat infrastructure problems holistically rather than through multiple funding streams. Well, there is an issue around spillover effects, and this relates mainly to where people from one province seek healthcare services in another province. I mean, in some of our interactions with the provinces, especially the provincial legislature, we find the legislature complaining, especially in Gauteng, that people from Northwest and Limpopo and Mpumalanga actually put pressure on the hospitals, especially the central hospitals in Gauteng, because people move there on a daily basis. They're being bused to Chris Hani Baragwanath, which is not necessarily a big concern, because South Africa is a unitary state. But the concern is that inadvertently put pressure on their hospital budget. But on the, when we look at this issue much more, when we analyze it much further, we find that even it's not necessarily the case that people from other provinces move to Gauteng, but we also find that where in provinces where there are specialized hospitals, like Limpopo, for example, would have an EA specialized hospital. People from Gauteng would move from Gauteng to go and seek those specialized health services in Limpopo. So at the end of the day, everything balance out. But what the issue again there is that because the centralized healthcare facilities and centralized hospitals are much more expensive, if we see people at central hospital and they speak to our referral policy, is that when we treat people at central hospital, it becomes very expensive to treat them at that level rather than referring people to primary healthcare facilities where the costs are much cheaper. Well, there's also an issue of skewed distribution of healthcare facilities, and again, this speaks to where some of these central hospitals are placed. Many of our central hospitals are in Gauteng provinces, and some provinces do not have central hospitals at all, and this caused this whole problem of people moving from being referred from one province to another to the other province. Well, the other issue is that we find with another encroachment which happened through conditional grants is that when we have this problem of provinces not being able to fund to reinvest the auxiliary services offered by national entities, the solution tends to be to top slice some of the conditional grants to fund services offered by national health entities, and we think that is an unsustainable way of funding our national health entities, because they have to be funded through the fees from the provinces and not necessarily through the conditional grants. There is also a long-standing issue around the funding of municipal health services, which is often regarded as an unfunded mandate, particularly our metropolitan areas run. Some of our metropolitan areas run primary health care centers, clinics, and they do not receive any funding from the national government. And that most metro municipalities see it as an unfunded mandate. We've looked at this issue, in 2011-12 submission, and we've made recommendations around how to address unfunded mandates within municipalities. I think I've spoken about the effect of function shift reforms on the provincial equitable share. What we note there is that when there is a function shift from provinces to the national department, there tends to be this tension around the amount of money which must move from the provinces to the national entities to fund what the function which is being shifted, and And there's a perception which exists that provinces do underfund their healthcare mandates. But when the shift happened, when this shifting happened, the national government want to claim the full cost of providing such health services. And what we find that there's always a tension around how much money moves from the provincial equitable share to the national government. Lastly, Chairperson, the other thing which we did not put there is around the health revenue retention. We've recently received a request from the National Department around the need for provinces to retain some of the healthcare fees which they collect via through the hospital fees. And the issue there is that the provinces want to retain some of the revenue which they collect in order to invest into revenue generation intervention. So the issue, I think, is around standardizing revenue retention across the country so that we don't have fragmented retention strategies throughout the province. But also the issue is also to make sure that when provinces do set revenue collection targets, the targets are informed by the actual capacity to collect. Because what you find is that in many cases they under targeting some provinces deliberately under target revenue collection so that when they over collect they can retain some of the revenue. So what we say is standardize revenue retention, but also make sure that your revenue targets are informed by the actual capacity to collect on the ground. Now, concerning health planning and coordination, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, what we note there is that challenges of vertical and horizontal coordination are planning specific within the healthcare center, and this is not only limited to the healthcare center. It happens throughout the functions which are the concurrent functions. Through our deliberations with provinces, especially concerning the equitable share formula, what we find is that provinces are occasionally held liable for undermining national priorities, but at the same time, there is concerns about the imposition of national policies on them. So what they say, essentially, the provincial equitable share formula does not take into account their province-specific health priorities, but in the main addresses the national priorities which are set by the national department. To us, this highlights the weaknesses of intergovernmental forum, which are supposed to coordinate policies with it, both from the national government and between the provinces. There are certain intergovernmental forums which have been set, and their main function is to make sure that there is coordination between health policy coordination between provinces and the national government. And we've also seen these coordination problems, especially in the implementation of NHI pilots. When the grant was first introduced as a direct grant, it was seriously underspent, as the members would know. But when we traced where actually the problem sat, was not necessarily because the provinces could not spend that money. It was because of these very coordination problems where provinces did not know where to spend that money, where provinces did not know where to spend that money on. And again, this speaks to whether there is this coordination between national departments and provinces when new policies are being introduced and when the new grants are being introduced. Speaking again about grant reforms, what we note there is that the health sector has one of the oldest conditional grants in the system. If you think about the health facility revitalization grant, the NTSG, and the health profession training development grant, these are some of the grants which have been in the system for a very long time. But the principles of conditional grants prescribes that conditional grants are supposed to address national priorities on a temporary basis. What we find amiss is that these grants have been there for a very long time, and therefore questions the need, or maybe there's a need for consideration to start incorporating these grants into the provincial equitable share, because they've already been I mean, provinces almost know where to spend the money on, and they've already been institutionalized within the provincial delivery system. With respect to the National Health Grant, well, it has gone quite significant number of changes within a very short period of time, from 2011 when the grant was first introduced. I mean, it has changed from being a direct grant to being an indirect grant to a direct grant with an indirect component, and now it's completely an indirect grant. And what we're noticing there again is that the grant is growing much faster than all the other health grants. And in the main, what we also find again is that the grant is some of the elements of the grant is to address the infrastructure challenges. What we're saying is here is that because the health facility revitalization grant is supposed to address infrastructure challenges, there is no need to duplicate infrastructure funding through a different funding stream. Rather, allocate the infrastructure funding, which for NHI through the health facility revitalization grant. And lastly, before I hand over to my colleague Khalid to take you through the last bit of the presentation, it's just to note to highlight the issue around grant performance and IGR, intergovernmental fiscal relations issues. So our view is that conditional grants underperform due to poor planning and poor consultation during introduction. In our experiences, what we find was that when the conditional grants are first introduced, there is no prior planning processes to prepare provinces which are going to receive these conditional grants so that they can be, grants can start spending on the first year which they're introduced. But that's essentially because the provinces tend to know about new conditional grants on the very first year in which they are going to be implemented, and that creates obviously implementation problem. So we need long lead times before conditional grants are being introduced, so that there can be sufficient preparatory plans on the part of the provinces and municipalities to make sure that when the grants are eventually introduced, they can be able to implement. And we've made recommendation around this, and what we have seen with the early childhood development grant, even though I digress, but which I think is very important to highlight, is that in this current financial year, there's a new early childhood development grant which is being introduced, and this was proposed about 2 years ago, and there was the Minister of Finance indicated that this grant in 2 years ago through the budget that there was going to be an ECD grant introduced, but it's only going to be effective in 2 years' time, and we think that that's a much better planning process, which should be adhered to, and it will make sure that the grants are spent effectively. So essentially, what we're saying is that the department, not necessarily the Department of Health, needs to adhere to guidelines for introducing conditional grants, in the main, providing for a 3 year period. Making provision for capacity building. And as a general rule, we are suggesting that indirect conditional grants should be avoided. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to hand over to my colleague Daud to complete the presentation.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. This is the last section of the presentation as per the request by the committees. as we know, the department has six programs, and these programs have been formulated or restructured or developed for the department since 2012, when the department restructured its organogram so that it can be aligned with the strategic priorities in the health sector. The strategic goals and objectives of the department in our assessment are well aligned to the 9 NDP goals, as well as the sustainable development goals that the UN that the United Nations adopted in 2015. Now, critical new priorities that have been advanced in the department's recent strategic plan to address national development goals include the re-engineering of primary health care, NHI rollout, improving health information systems, monitoring national norms and standards, and preventing disease and reducing its burden. So when you look at the spending of the department, you will see that the department has tried to align its spending along those priorities. Now, moving on to the actual spending of the department as well as the MTF budget by program area, according to the six program areas, what we notice is that the Department of Health has been allocated a budget of 42.6 billion rand in 2017-18, and that increases to 50.3 billion in 2019-20. So when you take account inflation, this represents a growth of about 3.4% per annum compared to the previous growth of 2.9% for the period 2013-14 to 2016-17. Now, in the context of other national votes or national departments, it's the real growth of the department is significantly higher than many other national departments. And in terms of the priority areas, this is likely to go towards the expansion of HIV/AIDS and TB treatment, as well as the revitalization of the public health care facilities. Moving on to the next slide, and this slide basically breaks down the total allocation of the department across the six programs to see where the department actually allocates most of its funding. Now, when we look at this particular graph, we see that the HIV/AIDS, TB, and maternal health and hospitals, these are two programs, consume the bulk of the DOH's budget over both periods. First period is from 2013-14 to 2016-17, and the second period is 2017-18 to 2019-20, that's the MTF period. So over both periods, these two programs consume the bulk of the resources. And over the 2017 MTF period, these two programs consume 92% of the total departmental budget. So we can see that really these are the main priority areas for the department. What we also note is that over the 2017 MTF period, the proportion of the budget that's allocated to HIV/AIDS, TB, and maternal health increases from 39% to 44%. And this highlights the priority attached to the UNAIDS target for 2020, which is aimed at curbing HIV epidemic and reducing TB infections. Now, in terms of our assessment, the increased priority attached to these funding areas is likely to have a positive impact on health outcomes, especially your mortality rates, as well as your life expectancy. Okay, just in terms of this slide, the main point that we'd like to make here is that we look at the assessment of the budget according to line items. So which line items are increasing and which ones are going down? And what we find is that with all of the line items increases above inflation for the 2017 MTF period, with the exception of compensation of employees. And the main reason for that is that a total of 209 employees are actually being redeployed to work for the newly established African Health Products and Regulatory Authority. So that's the main reason why the compensation budget is actually decreasing over the MTF period. Now, moving on to the next slide, and we look at where the bulk of the resources are actually going to in terms of line items. What is very interesting from this slide is that the bulk of the national department's resources are actually allocated to transfers and subsidies in the form of conditional grants which are dispersed to provincial departments of health and transfers to public entities. So the big chunk of the department's resources is actually going outside of the department, and therefore it's quite critical how the department actually coordinates its interaction with these entities to ensure that the spending on those transfers are actually effective. Moving on to the department's performance, where we look at how the department spends and also the performance indicators, what we've observed is that the spending performance of the department has improved from 97.7% in 2014-15 to almost close to 100% in 2015-16. So the department has improved in terms of its spending performance. But when we look at the department's performance indicators, and this is from the latest strategic plan of 2016-17, we see that the department is expecting to report against 142 performance indicators. And this is an increase of 40% against the number of indicators that the department reported on in 2014-15. Yet the budget for the Department of Health is only increasing in real terms by about 1%. So our concern is, will the sector be able to achieve all of the additional targets with the available resources? And if we are going to include many new indicators, the department then needs to find a way for an oversight perspective how to assess the level of importance of each indicator and how to prioritize indicators for reporting purposes that are more important than others, so that critical indicators are not obscured by all the information that is reporting on. So that's a very important point from oversight perspective. If you're going to report against 142 indicators, then tell us what set or subset of those indicators are actually critical for service delivery, so that we can monitor those rather than trying to find a way through 142 indicators and not pick up the important indicators that we need to actually play an oversight role on. The AG also raised the concern about the lack of audit information that supports performance indicators that departments report on in the department's 2014-15 annual report. However, our assessment of the department's strategic plan, we did not come across anything that gave us an assurance that any intervention is in place to address this issue in an explicit way. So while the AG has highlighted this as a critical concern in terms of improving performance information, from a national department's perspective, there's nothing in the strategic plan that tells us what exactly is the department going to do on the ground to try and address this particular issue among the provinces. Moving on to the next slide. This slide looks at the provincial health audit outcomes for the past 5 years, from 2011-12 until 2015-16. And what we note is that the health audit outcomes are predominantly poor, with only three provinces receiving an unqualified audit, or otherwise referred to as a clean audit, in 2015-16. So out of the nine provinces, only three received a clean audit. Now when we look at the past 5 years, the situation has remained relatively unchanged, with only a few exceptions here and there. So this picture that we've seen in terms of audit outcomes in 2015-16 is more or less similar over the past 5 years, with very, very few changes in terms of performance. And when we assess the department's strategic plan, the latest one, the department indicates that it wants to increase the number of unqualified audits in the province to 7 by 2018-19. But there's little information about any plan the department intends to adopt to support the province in this regard. So on the one hand, we are saying that we have a target of increasing clean audits to 7 by 2018-2019, but there's no indication of any plan in terms of implementation of how we actually got to get there. Now, my colleague Eddie spoke about the challenges with respect to the implementation of the conditional grants. And here we're looking at the performance in terms of spending by the provincial departments. And what we noticed that for most of the health grants, spending has been close to 100% over the past 4 years, 2012, 13 to 2015-16. So that's over a period of 4 years. Most of the conditional grants have been spent 100%, with the exception of the health facility revitalization grant and the NHI grant that my colleague spoke about. And the review of the NHI grant showed teething problems that related to the structuring of the funding instrument, which showed very little impact in terms of delivery on the ground. Now, we know that the grant is being phased out in 2016-17 and it's going to be carrying on as an indirect component of the National Health Grant. Now, in our 2017 Division of Revenue Bill submission to this particular committee, you may be aware that we expressed our concern that allocations alone cannot address the institutional and operational challenges at provincial level, and that an indirect NHI grant should be used to build capacity of health district offices as they are central to the implementation of NHI. So yes, we can convert this to an NHI indirect grant, but when NHI comes, what we need is strong district health institutions, and this indirect grant should start building capacity at that level. So that when NHI starts rolling out, we know that we are able to implement this without the types of teething problems that the direct grant has experienced over the past few years. Now moving on to the next slide, and here what we're doing is we're looking at the allocations to the health sector conditional grants over the 2017 MTS period. And the key point here that we'd like to highlight is that given the poor performance on the health facility revitalization grant, baseline reductions of 248 million rand has been effected over the 2017 MTF period, resulting in essentially a zero increase in this particular grant. And the Commission has previously stated that any baseline reductions to grants should be preceded by an expenditure review to determine the extent to which the objectives of the grants are being affected. So in other words, we have a certain objective for this particular grant. And if we decide we're going to cut the baseline, are those objectives being compromised in the process? And that's something that's currently not being done at the moment, an assessment of that. Moving on to the final slide, which looks at the spending assessment of the provincial health departments. Okay, the slide's going to come up now. What we note here is that 5 out of the 9 provincial departments of health overspent its budget in 2015-16. So out of the 9 provinces, 5 of those overspent, and they indicated in the red font on the slide over there. Now, for some provinces, overspending has been a persistent problem, for example, Northwest and KZN. So if you look at the spending performances of the provinces in the previous years, you'll note that KZN and Northwest, among others, have consistently overspent. So we can see here that we are dealing with something which is a chronic issue. And the major cost pressures on provincial health budgets are, one, your goods and services in the main, and then also your personnel expenditure. Those are the two line items that are your main cost drivers or cost pressures for your provincial health budgets. Provinces have also reported significant increase in contingent liabilities over the period concerned. And this is largely because of legal action taken due to negligence by health professionals. Chairperson, at this point I'd like to hand over to Professor Plaikis, who will take us through the concluding slide. Thanks.
Chair, what we would like to confirm, there's been significant increases to the baseline budgets over the 2017 MTF. These increases are in particular targeting the expanded rollout of HIV and AIDS and TB treatment and prevention, revitalization of healthcare facilities, and expanding the NHI rollout. However, there is a major concern regarding addressing the financial and implementation performance of provinces, given the significant role they play in service delivery in the healthcare sector. The National Health Insurance reforms, we believe, must address coordination challenges in the sector, especially when it comes to fostering joint planning and increasing health facility budget autonomy. We have the view that this is the next best and biggest reform the healthcare sector is going to see. Whilst it's about ensuring health insurance, on the other hand, it requires the administration, the institutional arrangements around health, the service delivery system, to move along in that way. And there seems to be, from our engagements with health on this matter, which is limited in many instances, as the Prosperation Chair would note after our last colloquium that we had in Midrain, that we still think there are lots of lessons to be learned from the education sector, in particular on how they've dealt with reforms within the financing arrangement. Especially issues like funding allocations to schools and districts. So I think there are opportunities that sectors can learn from each other, but in particular health, there are lots of things that need to happen with regard to the NHI reforms. Chair, with that, I'm not so sure whether I'm handing back to you or whether I'm closing my presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for FFC for the presentation. It is not a preamble, but one would like to applaud the department for improving on the spending. I think it's a good move and a good story to tell. One must talk about that. We thank them for that. I'm really having I'll just deal with two issues, Chairperson. The first one, I want to talk to the issue of spillover effects. You know, some people believe that there is life in housing. And in other instances, these people do not just drive to housing hospitals. sometimes they are being transferred from the provinces where there is no capacity to can assist them. So they happen to be in Gauteng. That is why I wanted to say it is not necessarily that really they just go to Gauteng, but they end up getting assistance in Gauteng. So I think let's allow them the right to life in that regard. The other issue, Chair, I hear the provinces are crying. With regard to the imposition of policies by national, I don't know. I need to be clarified. Is our provinces having their own policies to implement? Or why is it that they are saying that it's being imposed to them? Can we have clarity on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation by Financial and Fiscal Commission. It is always interesting to listen to them. But, Chair, I just thought I should let you know in the House that whilst we are debating very important issues to do with health, we this morning lost another very valuable member of the medical profession and the community, Dr. Imran Khalil. He went to see a patient late at night, and on his way back he had a serious accident 2 days ago and he died this morning. So may his soul rest in peace. I want some guidance from the Financial Fiscal Commission. A lot of what you told us is very pertinent, very important. We know some of these challenges exist ourselves. This has been a repetition for many years. We know this is going on. There's a lot of good work being done. However, now, you know, we find that from the district level there seems to be a problem. My understanding, it might be my personal opinion, that maybe we'll do a much better job if we put more emphasis onto districts. It's a smaller area to govern and capacitate them. And I think, you know, while province can have overall control over them, but it's my understanding that maybe if we go that route, we might get better. Because the problem we're sitting with, I see there are two different elements here. The one on the one side, we talk about money, and all the emphasis is on money. And all the emphasis is on this unqualified audit, qualified audit, which for me, to be honest with you, doesn't mean a thing. What I want to see is what is happening on the ground, that when you equate it, must now work and must be in the benefit of the people and change their lives. It must create a better, healthier environment. And that is clearly not happening. It would be hypocrisy for me to say that there's no good service. There is. But clearly, I find that when you take that money you're spending in a particular area, we are not going down to the very last bit to say, I spent 10 million rand here in this particular area of health. Did I get 10 million rand worth of value? Did I or didn't I get it? And until for me that we bring the two together and insist that don't just spend the money, because spending, we are brilliant, you know that we all can spend money even if you don't have. Spending is one thing, but getting that quality. So that's the one first problem that I've got about 17 questions, but I was restricted to two, so right. 17, Chair. No, that is just one. Okay. Now, so that is generally the my one serious question. Then maybe you're going to be able to then guide me what you believe that we should be able to do in terms of that. Now, the other problem that we tend to be having is, if you notice, it seems like in South Africa, we are a very sick nation. Really, if you look at it, every other disease you're talking about is going up and up and up. And the emphasis, whilst I know the minister is very sincere about saying prevention, we are not doing that on the ground. We are now treating, just wanting to treat. So let them be created every day. Something new is coming up and we're spending money on that. So I want you to tell us, what should we do on the one hand to put great emphasis on creating a more healthy nation instead of putting the burden on and taking the entire money that you're allocating and going and treating the diseases, like, I mean, the non-communicable diseases. I mean, it's ridiculously high. And yet, what do? We will promote all the things that will actually have harmful effect and come back and it hurts us more. So that's what I want you to tell us. What should happen in terms of us putting more emphasis on trying to create a better, healthy society rather than, you know, trying to save people that are already on the way out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much, FFC, for that very useful presentation. The first thing that I would like to just comment on is the issue of coordination, which I think is very, very key, if ever we think we expect to succeed in the implementation of our program. Because I'll tell you why, it's not uncommon to find that at provincial level, you have lots of projects which are labeled national projects, not necessarily in the health sector, but across departments, where you find that sometimes it cannot be completed because at provincial level, they'll say they are waiting for national, for funds from national, and projects would actually remain there unfinished for long periods. And I think I just wanted to say that this is one of the most important things, that this issue of coordination and joint planning, because, you know, if we've got parallel process of planning, things just cannot go right. Let me see which one. Okay. Then the second thing that I would like to then again comment on is this thing of spillovers. I know one of my colleagues has spoken to it. But this issue of spillovers to provinces, it is a very big challenge, not only because I come from Gauteng, but I know that provinces that have got facilities, I also, we need to accept the fact that most of these provinces that flood, provinces like Gauteng, are provinces that don't have facilities, they don't have adequate facilities. And as a result, they go over there. So it's not only individuals going into other provinces, but it is also health facilities from those provinces transferring patients to provinces like Gauteng, bringing them in ambulances, bringing them in buses sometimes, and then the problem comes when those provinces have to pay or reinvest to actually settle the bills. You find that those bills run into hundreds of thousands and they are never paid. So I don't know what mechanism can be used to actually try and address this one, because there isn't any system to say if they don't pay you can't say if they don't pay then don't accept their patients, because patients have got the right to access health facilities as long as it's in this country or even outside of this country. So I thought that I should just comment on that we do have that challenge. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Next, Member Ma.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks to FSC for the presentation. No, it's just a question maybe on slide number 12, on the NHI pilot grant. There is an indication that provinces were unaware of what to use the grant for. Were there no guidelines set by the national department which led you to say that they were not aware of what to use the grant for? The other one, I think, looking at slide number 21, it is clear that you know, the budget constraint can be a challenge in the implementation of 142 performance indicators, as they have indicated. I think maybe we have to request the intervention strategic plan from the department to address the concern by AG on the lack of audit information that supports the performance indicators, and also to request maybe for the prioritization of indicators that will be implemented looking at the budget, that you know there have been an increase of performance indicators of 40%, whereas the budget is a marginal increase in the budget. Maybe too, so that when we do our oversight, we know exactly which which performance indicators are critical for service delivery, that they will never compromise in this budget. Maybe, Chair, because it's two questions, I can pose there the moment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation is good. It points out the weaknesses and ideally what should be. And it doesn't proffer solutions. It's just an ideal type of thing. But then there is a lot of problems regarding the coordination and wasteful expenditures, inefficiencies, and lack of capacity. The presentation does not tell us how to get this one done. It points out it's the department's duty to solve the problems. And will it not be better if the National Department of Health could take charge of NHI infrastructure and personnel capacitation until it is done, while these other things are happening on the side? And then when it hands it over, it is done, and instead of hoping that things will be better and things will change. Things don't change by themselves. Things have to be changed. And you can't keep on doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different outcomes. I think medically it's a sign of madness. So we have this unfortunate situation where year in, there is no change in the audit outcomes, and we keep on hoping that next year maybe we will get something better, instead of saying, well, if you don't come here with qualified audit, you're either unqualified or you go and be accountable until you bring us something better. For 5 years, I see some didn't even have any audit for 3 consecutive years. There is nothing to audit, but they keep on giving them money. They should be under administration long ago, and somebody do something about it. Then HIV, AIDS, and TB are drivers of costs in the healthcare system and the major cause of mortality. Now, the preventative methods are not working, obviously. Why don't we find some other ways of preventing this pandemic, stabilize, maintain, and save lives? Just being proud that we are spending more on the problem without solving the problem is really problematic. We spend much more of the national department or health budget on these two pandemics, and they cause more death every year, and we keep on pouring money at the problem without finding a solution. Don't we just pause a little bit and try and find something that can actually declare the disaster and do something about it until it stabilizes, and we can go forward and look for something and spend money on something else. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Firstly, I just want to express my profound gratitude to our leadership, the two chairs, for having thought of bringing this oversight meeting together, because I think it has opened our eyes to many things that we can improve on. And my view is that the FFC has highlighted the weaknesses, and I would like to hear from the DG if the department agrees with the findings of the FFC, the observation of the FFC, and what is it that they are going to do about this. And I think, Chair, this should not be an event. We should repeat this, a follow-up on this thing, because health is the right to life is the most important right in our constitution. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will stick to the two questions. One of the biggest problems that we have, the departments work in silence. During the planning stage, I think departments should sit down and see how can they, for the benefit of the citizens, plan together and share resources and share also, you know, your facilities to deliver to our people. You know, social service, social development should be working closely with health departments, because most of their patients belong to each other. For them to sort that mess out, they should be working together, they should be planning together on how do they share their resources in terms of making sure that they deliver quality services to our people. Another thing is, we cannot just continue to cure and cure. We've got to teach our people how to take responsibility of their lives, their well-being, their health. We've got to give them education so that they can take responsibility of their health. No money can ever be enough to look after every citizen in their homes, in their workplace. We cannot. Our citizens at some stage have to learn. We've got to give them information that they take informed decisions. The myths are moved out. And if we don't do that, we'll never have enough money. This department will never have enough money. I'm not sure what happened to the clinics, the provincialization of clinics is still on, or are the clinics in the metro is going to continue being working on them by themselves? Or is the department now going to fund them directly? Or, you know, because there's these SLAs with the provincial government, how is that going to work? Because some of them are doing, you know, beautiful work. Some of course aren't, but they're doing very great work. And I just want to know, is that going to happen anytime soon, or is that agenda on?
Thank you, Madam. I apologies for coming in a bit later. I just have, I shall restrict myself to two questions. On this slide's not numbered. It's headed spending and MTF budget by programs. And you say here the higher growth in the budget allocation is as a result of funding the expansion of HIV/AIDS and TB treatment. In your opinion, was no account taken of the fact that our population is growing? And an increased size of population must obviously increase the size of the budget to deal with the health issues in that population. It seems we're only looking at the problems and not at the number of people we're actually dealing with. Shouldn't that be a factor, is my question. And then on the next slide, which is program share of total spending and budget, it seems to me, and I'm sort of echoing what the Western Cape said yesterday, there problems with compliance issues. The compliance issues that don't bring any value, don't add any value to it. We're spending 4% of our budget on health regulations and compliance management, which is four times as much as we spend on primary health care services. Four times more on compliance than on health care services. This can't be right. I don't know whether you have an opinion or a feeling on that, but I just thought I'd like to hear your comments on it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair. I think for me, the FF says,
remind us that in whatever work we are doing, we will have to ensure that, which I think that is why the National Health Insurance is there, that we then address the challenges that we have in the sector before. And I do think that it is important, as much as we are not always to hamper in our history, but it's a fact. We had 14 different departments of health in this country. And that, as we are then moving on, therefore, we think that the National Health Insurance is important. It is important more than before. And we will have to ensure that at a district level, which I think that's what is very important, at a district level, because that's where things are happening, we are to ensure that. That's why when we conduct oversights, we become frustrated, DG, when we are coming across into the issues of HR in particular. Because I believe that, as I've said in one of the days, that health, there's no robot which is going to deliver health. It's warm bodies, it's people. And then you say that within the context of a challenge of the country in terms of resources. But the spillover effects. I was sitting here, I said to the co-chair, I would have appreciated if you didn't only identify Baragwanath. Okay? Here, it's only in the last 10 years, we had Red Cross Children's Hospital, which has been there, and everybody in the country. Yeah, it is now that there is a Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital in Gauteng. So I want to come back to say how then health was structured has created these problems that we are having. And therefore, it is then going to be very important that maybe as we move forward, what is it that we are to do as lawmakers? What is supposed to be our focus? The Honorable James have raised a very important issue, but it has got a number of things there that are the high rate of unemployment, the situation of education in our country that have made our people not to be deliberately ignorant, but because of the system itself. And therefore, I think my last point is that I take the point that says, will it not be important that as we move forward, we focus, when we look into our programs, what really are the key issues that we think that they must be looked into with the challenges that they are. A health sector is quite a very challenging sector, but it's about time that we see how then do we navigate so that we are then able to move forward. And I want to say to Professor Plagis, I think thank you very much for reminding us where we are coming from. So that in whatever we are doing, we know that we are correcting. We are correcting a legacy that we must not be apologetic in saying that. We can't be apologetic in saying that because our people will judge us very harsh, worse in the sector of health. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much. I will now hand over to you, Professor.
Honorable Chair, I thought I would be given an opportunity to respond based on what the other honorable member said, so that would be an opportunity within which they could, because there are quite a lot of issues raised, but also I think gaps and incorrect
assumptions and information which I'd like to correct on record. Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. First, let me thank the FSC for the presentation, but I just wanted to comment on the very first principle, Chair, that for purposes of briefing Parliament and anybody else, I would advise that we use correct data and sources. The first is on information regarding life expectancy. Life expectancy as reported by StatsSA in their mid-year estimates, Chair, 2016, is that it's actually 62.5, not 57. In fact, it's one thing that South Africa is applauded for. Now, 57 is too low. Actually, 57 takes us back. It's for women, Chair, it's 65. And for males, it's 59.5. So it's a huge gap, even for males. Males, it's 59.5. Females, it's 65. So on average, it's about. So it's the latest, and I think the official source for the country is StatsSA. So that's the data we're quoting, Chair. So I that's the first observation that I wanted to refer to. And perhaps, Chair, what would be of use and helpful, and this is what you discussed over a number of days, that when we talk outward and inward migration in South Africa, we talk about movement of people within the country, but those are South Africans. But the Act, the National Health Act, is very specific. And I would like to cite that because this particular section talks about interprovincial movement, and it's the very basis, and I think here they say spillover, and I think we need to handle our people with sensitivity. When people move from one province to the other, it's not spillover. They are seeking care, and the Act has made provision for that. Section 41(3) of the National Health Act actually made provision for that because we recognize that you only have 10 central hospitals in this country, 10. 4 in Gauteng, 2 in Western Cape. In KZN, you've got 2, 1 in Free State, and 1 in Eastern Cape. Now, just looking at those 10, it's important that, and this is what we've been making arguments for, that these must be considered national assets so that they can be accessed by all South Africans. So it cannot be a spillover. So I'd like to say, Chair, in terms of that, The grants that we're talking about were actually created for that purpose. The national health, the service, particularly the tertiary service grant, from its inception, if the FSC can go back, why it was created for that purpose, so that when you have these movements across the borders, when we've given you money as Gauteng, we must be able to cover those people who have moved from Mpumalanga to seek care, and those who have moved from Limpopo. So I would really like FSC to go back and see what the intention was when those grants were created, and in terms of this provision of Section 41(3), why we have that. We have that provision, and we have the grant. And those grants were created for that purpose. We forever said to Gauteng, when people seek care and are transferred from Limpopo, you cannot deny them access. For the very reason that we've got an S and we've created a grant for that purpose. So I thought we needed to address that. The next one, Chair, is about imposition of national policies. I heard that came up, and I would like to refer CHES to the National Health Act, because this act was written nicely, because it creates the National Health Council. Now, who is the National Health Council? Is the minister? Is the MEC? Is the HOV? Is myself? Is the DDGs? And the South African Military Health Services? Now, any policy change has to be tabled there and adopted. But one condition is that for any policy, before it's even adopted, we want the costing. Meaning you have a policy, it must be costed, because we need to know what the cost implications are. Now, what happens when a policy is tabled? If it's not costed, it gets sent back. Because by the time it's adopted and we've agreed on the cost implications, it means everybody must go and implement. So there's no other mechanism that exists except that which is provided for in terms of the act. So this imposition, I don't know where it comes from. Who imposes on who? Because it's written in the act. And the National Health Council, it's on record. We can share the minutes. We can share the report. Meaning you are free to examine the decision-making processes when it comes to policy. So I thought I needed to dispel that and clarify it up front. The next one, Chair, NHI grant. Again on this one, can I again request that we all read the green paper and the white paper. When the green paper was created, we said we want to test certain ideas on how this is going to work. It was not a funding mechanism, and it should never be. For NHI to be funded, you need a proper vehicle. The vehicle is that you must create the NHI fund. There must be a fund, not a grant, a fund. Now, this was to say, okay, at the district level, how will it work? Now, what the districts, and why I keep on saying the district chair, is because that money did not do that. So what we decided, we said, okay, we'll do it. If that's the imposition, we took donor money and we created project managers because provinces could not do it. So I'm just saying that to improvise in the process is what we did. But that's why we've ended the fund, because, the grant, it was not intended to be a funding vehicle, and it should never be. You need a fund when you create NHI, if you want to really deliver for this country. I think those are generally things that I thought I needed, and I'm referring them to the Act and actual records that exist, including our planning tools. It seems they've not seen them, they're not aware of them. Audit tools, data tools, indicator sets, all those are on record, and they've been approved by the Auditor General himself. So we can share those with the Chair. So I don't want us to live here with the impression that those don't exist. If they've not approached us to ask for them, we'll share them with the menu itself. Thank you, Chair.
Consolidation with respect to these cost drivers without input cost pressure, to remember, in dealing with the fisc, okay, is these cost drivers without disrupting services. We need to emerge with proposals and solutions to these challenges. Because yesterday, you'll remember, we kept on talking about somebody said there's fiscal consolidation. And then we said, but you are supposed, in your response, you're supposed to also adjust according to that. So can you assist us there? Now, again, the provinces have indicated that possibly we need to establish a state-owned pharmaceutical company. I'm sure the DG can also respond to that. What's your view on this, and what is possible in the short term, if feasible? State-owned pharmaceutical company, your view, and then the DG can also respond to that. Okay. No, that's fine. Over to you. Now we're not going to disrupt you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I want to say also thank you to the DG. In fact, the DG, just by the DG's explanation, is actually strengthening our presentation. I don't know whether the DG actually realized that, because in no way are we saying something different. There isn't. I'm a member of the Stats South Africa Council, and I would acknowledge I actually didn't look at this point of the I should have, as a member of the Stats Council, of the 47H. But remember, we're saying it was in 2013. And the DG is correct to say in 2016, the 2016 measure is 62%. So that's a fact, that's correct. But we weren't wrong. The thing is not wrong, because we are making it clear the 2013 number. So I'm thankful to the DG for correcting that. I'm going to answer a number of comments made, and then I'll hand over to the staff to deal with some of the specifics. The one point that was raised, creating a more healthy nation, what should be done? I think I just want to alert and confirm with members of both committees, chairs, that is the people in health knows far better than us as to how to go about creating a healthy society. Because on the one end, it is about a human capital development. On the other end, it's more specifically about investments in health and health service provision. It's got to do with education, making sure there's an interconnect from early childhood right up to higher education. And there's the stuff that we've been saying to the Fees Commission. There's this disconnect between the different levels of education. There's been excellent inputs, but also outcomes in terms of the investment in education and similarly in health. So there is a consolidated move within the government of South Africa in particular to look at how do we bring health, welfare, education, and also the minimum wage package, social wage package to bear, access to water, housing, etc., that helps with creating a much more healthy nation. But is it specific to health inputs? I think the DG and the team are the qualified people to talk specifically about and other areas that they talk to about how, what can be done with that. The other point that I thought, I agree with the DG in terms of section 35 of the Public Finance Management Act. All policies, all legislation must be costed. If it doesn't get costed, we would say to Parliament, then send it back. And if the DG correctly suggests that the legislation has been, policies have been costed, now here's the point. Just the mere fact that the policy has been costed and there's a pricing structure to the policy doesn't suggest that the intergovernmental fiscal transfers, equitable share, and the conditional grant will necessarily be coterminous or rather the same as how the policy has been costed. The point I'm making is that if your policy, I know that some years ago we said to one department, which will remain anonymous for now, that if you want to have this policy, it's going to cost 50 billion rands. Now, through this costing, it showed it came to close to 53 billion rands. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the fiscal framework will follow through on what you have cost and priced as a policy. Because when it comes to a certain level, there's a trade-off that's going on in the provinces. There's a trade-off between education, schooling, between health, because those are the two big ones in the provinces. And then there's the social development, and then there's the roads and infrastructure, and then there's the premier's office, and so on and so forth. So there's this thing that, and hence we raise the issue, is that vertical coordination between a national policy and the unintended consequences and the impact it has on budgetary decisions within provinces. And that's a political matter, because the equitable share allocation gets allocated to provinces, and provinces, through their own understanding of what is for them a priority, what is sorry, what are ongoing concerns and carry through costs? They decide how the cake should be cut. And in many ways, your the allocation doesn't always sit quite nicely with what the national policy imperative is and what the national policy requires. And that's what we call a classical disjunction between a policy of a sector, which is in health, for example, and what happens on the financial side. And sometimes the two doesn't talk together, because you know what needs to be remembered, chairpersons and honorable members, is that I used to work in the Treasury, the National Treasury, and I can say to you, in most instances, Treasury has got more information around the financing of plans, policies, and priorities than line departments. And as a result, you find that disjuncture between what the policy says and how the financial system works. Hence, if you overlay that with the whole question of fiscal austerity measures and fiscal consolidation, it just further complicates it. So the point I'm making is that we need to be cautious when we suggest that if you've done the costing and pricing of your policy in your own department and it gets adopted by Parliament, for instance, legislation, that cost automatically has an effect on the division of revenue. It doesn't work like that. And that's a critical matter. And it's got to do with the fiscal framework that gets adopted every year, that Cabinet adopts on the allocation of resources. So from a health perspective, you might not see it as an imposing, which is correct, because you're sitting with your own sector. But if you sit with the others that compete with you for the same bucket of resources in your province, they would see your policies and legislation imposing. Because what you want, you take away from Paul to pay Peter. That's how prioritization happens. So there's a shift on the... I remember one MSC from the Eastern Cape used to say that there's this thing about playing maraba-raba, you know, with the fiscus. You take here, give to them, and it's a division of revenue issue. So that's what's going on. So the imposition is not directed at the province, at the national department. It's an element of the context of policy and financing of those policies. So we need to see it in that. And health will say to you, one of the policies that health have was the bottle is half full. In the 96-97, and it's exactly on the financing. Health was arguing that there must be a block grant to health as opposed to the equitable share allocation. That block grant will help the health, National Health Minister and his department and the different main councils that the DGs correctly talk about. They will then decide how to carve the cake. Right? Now, if that has happened, you won't have us having that the comment about the policy question. Then on the district health, improving health services, I think again the health the department can help us far better with that. You see, the the whole question about the spillover issue. Now, conditional grants is a transfer, is a financing transfer measure to deal with spillovers. Spillovers not the people. It's a facility, is located in Gauteng. Everybody goes there, for example, and it gets financed because it's a national priority. It's a national policy priority. It's a national service. So it gets financed through a conditional grant. So national has got an influence into it. Even though in the old system, old parts of last year, year before, the province will manage that particular hospital. Now here's the spillover question. And it's not going to do with people, please. It's got to do with a fiscal system. It's a fiscal theorem. It's a fiscal policy instrument. If you attend Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital and you come from another province, that service is already covered under the conditional grant. The spillover effect is that the people coming into that facility goes back to their provinces, right? So it's a cost of people from another province coming into that hospital, hence the conditional grant. But the spillover is that better health conditions. And that needs to be financed, better health services, that needs to be financed. So conditional grant is an instrument that deals essentially with the spillover effect. So it's not people spilling over. It's where the service is located and how that service serves people in another province. That's the issue, and where it's financed. Because if we had 9 Karasani Baragwana across the country, then you don't have a conditional grant for that. So that's the phenomenon in it. And it's a finance and fiscal policy issue, hence the National Treasury, hence the national government through the Treasury has this fiscal instrument, which is called a conditional grant. And with that, it actually helps to deal with an issue like that. There is a matter which I thought I would, on the fiscal consolidation, currently, the whole world and some of the lessons that we're learning from what's happening across the world is that, and in South Africa, it's clearly chairperson, if you want to deal with the inputs pressure without disrupting services, it's inevitable that you're going to have to reprioritize. Because you need to cut your suit in terms of the size of your clock. And that's unfortunate. It's just the way the fiscal system. I mean, we can have another conversation about whether we believe what are the options for government in terms of its own budget framework. But you need to review your strategic plans, because your strategic plans and your annual performance plans, if it's done correctly, it will identify the cost drivers. So there's a question there that. It's unfortunate. It's one of those things that needs to be rolled back. You need to look at ways. Where is, I don't want to call it waste, it's where are the inefficiencies? And based on that, so in many ways, I think from where we're sitting there, that the fiscal consolidation and austerity and rolling back on public expenditure, it's been themes that's been coming on for a number of years. But I don't think we have allowed sufficient time for provincial governments and departments to in particular look at how do they do this rollback. Where do we cut?
Sorry to interrupt you. You left with 5 minutes. Thank you.
Where do we cut on certain matters? So that's the other thing. And then the last on the, before I know it, quickly to the colleagues are saying 1 minute issues on it. Somebody raised the issue of provinces and coordination, Honourable Chairperson. There's been many studies done about whether we need provinces, which is a political decision. Some people see provinces as standing in the way of national policies, but there's a number of audits that has been done on provinces, and it would be interesting to know about what's in there. There's one thing that was, so there's a need to look at, require still the 9 provinces? Do we need to rearrange it so that health can actually quicker deliver on its service without having certain administrations in place? And then one of the things that your National Planning Commission ran away from or skirted or didn't want to address is the city region. There are places, Gauteng has got 3 huge cities. Do you need the Free State province in the way that we have it, and so on and so forth? I mean, there are a number of things that we need to look at, but these are all political decisions. There's nothing that we can do, but there is a need to look at the coordination. Just on the National Health Insurance Scheme, we've read it. We've had a symposium on it, two, in fact. with private and public providers. I've briefed the minister myself when we were on a flight from Johannesburg to Cape Town on the outcomes of our seminar and some of the. So we are aware of these things. So we're not doing nitpicking. We're identifying structural issues which can be addressed, and that's the reason why we've done it in that way. On the other questions, I don't know whether you got a minute each for Eddie and Dawood or not. It's okay. That concludes. So we are on the same page. It's just that we've identified some fiscal questions, which we in any case is going to identify with the National Treasury. So this is not just for the Department of Health. It's also our analysis where we're going to say to the Treasury in our normal interaction, here is what we think is missing. So we're using this also to deal with the Treasury. And in fact, Health will be happy when they see us that sometimes we're bad for health, for education, and for others. And Treasury doesn't sometimes like what you say. Thank you, Chair.
The debate will always be like that. People are expressing their different views. Some views you will like, some you won't like. So I think it is in the nature of a robust debate. But thank you very much for all the responses. I think we're happy that you came and you have, you know, I want to repeat what I said earlier on, enriched our thinking on these matters. So members, I think, will be in a better position to interrogate and make relevant recommendations, but also taking into consideration accurate information. So that, that thing becomes even more usable. The information becomes usable. Okay. No, thank you. In terms of our agenda, we are now on way forward, findings, and recommendations. Our hardworking staff did not sleep yesterday night. They worked hard and produced 8 documents that says joint meeting of the Senate Committee on Health and Appropriations. Okay,
sorry,
Chair, can we
be releases into the back? Because it's quite hot here in the front.
No, but we're finishing.
Okay.
As you move, you'll find that by the time you sit down, we say the meeting stands up chairs.
Okay.
So please just tolerate it for the next 5 minutes. 5, 10 minutes. Okay. So I was still saying our hardworking staff has produced this document, which is making proposals, summarizing the key issues that came up. Yeah, they came up. Key issues that were, they highlighted key issues from our 3 days engagement, on the effective coordination and alignment in the delivery of health services so as to ensure the realization of value for money, effectiveness, and efficiencies in the health sector planning and resource allocation. I have then said, looking at the time constraints, and if we want to deal with this diligently, we need more time. So I have then advised, in consultation with the chair, we then agree that let this document be circulated to all of you. And then, but do me a favor. Do read and analyze so that when you identify gaps, you then forward your input to the secretariat, to the secretariat, who will then effect those inputs in the document, as a way of presenting the document. And then this then suggests that we will need another joint meeting between the two committees to look at this document, the report, because in the meantime they'll be compiling the report, and then after the input here, I think this document will have to be recirculated again ourselves to invite us in here. And thereafter, this information will then be used in the report that is going to be tabled in the House for adoption by the House. That adoption would mean that the recommendation would then be expected to be implemented by can be the National Department of Health, and then cascade to the provincial department, because the resolution of the House resolutions of the House are binding. But it's very important that before we table it, everybody gets the document. I will not have a problem of also sending our report to you so that you validate the information before we table it. Because you are stakeholders, so you may as well receive the report just to satisfy yourself about a good representation of facts in the report. And then, because after that, it will then become a public document. And we want to send out accurate information to the public domain. And that's not what we want, actually. It is in compliance with the Constitution. I think it's Chapter 10 that says you've got to send out accurate information. And it talks about timeliness, information, and accurate information. So, you see, we try also to comply all the way, as we expect people to also balance performance and compliance in their way. All right? So are we in agreement with this way forward on this one? We circulate the document, members look at it, input, forward the input to the secretary, not to the chair. Well, they must then effect, and thereafter, we will then, it's the first draft, and then the second draft, we will circulate again the second draft, and thereafter, if once we agree, then we allow our admin staff to proceed with the report writing, and then taking this also into consideration. And then the first report draft will be circulated to stakeholders so that you satisfy yourself about or validate the information in the report, and then we table the report. The two committees. Now this procedure, the last one, I'm not sure of. Please, can I be guided on this one? Whether it is the two committees that will have to sit and adopt the report, or it is appropriations that initiated the whole exercise. Can I be educated on that one? Of honourable members, Ms. Babas.
Yes. Chairperson, I think that the two committees will have to adopt the report.
Okay.
And submit it to Parliament as a joint recommendation.
Thank you very much. See, I have learned all these new things that I have learned.
No, Chair, I want members to assist in terms of time frame.
Yeah.
I'm raising this because even this joint meeting took us almost a year or two. So I don't want us to go to that. This is very important. It was last year. We must then have a, so that when we go out of that door, we have committed ourselves to what important issues have been reflected in this. Thank you.
If you speak now, then it is the way forward. Time frame. Nothing else. I remember Professor, and then...
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we must find space as these two committees, even if it's next week in the evening, because, you know, this is a wonderful job that we have done. And there are very urgent things, and we must address it on time.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Although I agree with my colleague that this is an urgent matter that we need to deal with, but I will propose that by May we finalize this thing. I'm saying this because the whole April, we are on a constituency. We are coming back on the 2nd of May. So by May.
Okay.
So, yeah.
There are two proposals on the table.
Can we just be a little specific? I agree with the proposal, but can we say in the second week of May? just so that we allow programming to look at that second.
All right.
Chair, I want to support because it cannot be next week because health is going on oversight. The second committee week, in other words, the second week that we will be having committee meetings in May, I want to support that, that the second committee we have a joint sitting and then we finalize.
Okay. Accepted, Honourable Member. The need to be up here. The next thing that are going on oversight, so we will not follow procedure. Thank you very much. I think we have now agreed on the way forward. Okay. And then I see here it says closing remarks, co-chair. And closing remarks, I really would want to hand over to the people that they. The people of this committee is not around, but there's just a time to leave us those in the market. Because work that is done, that this is the leadership. So, Honorable Member Gobata.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I speak also on behalf of Comrade Fish Mahlalelo, who is the whip of the Health Portfolio Committee. And just to express our appreciation at these two committees, to the National Department and the Provincial Department with all the delegations that came from the Provincial Department, for heeding our call, which arose out of earlier interactions with the National Department of Health around challenges that are facing the health sector. And in the course of the 3 days, I am certain that we have now been made the wiser about the magnitude of work that is being done in that sector. And I want to emphasize the magnitude of the work that is done by that sector and achievements that have been made. But we are equally the wiser about the immense challenges that still exist, imposed by various circumstances, partly funding, which is obviously inadequate, in a very difficult economic environment in the country, but partly because of the inherited past, where we had certain sections of the population which were completely neglected on health issues and so on. This then tells us that as we conclude this meeting, we then have a huge responsibility jointly. Parliament, through its committees and the National Department and Provincial Department. And it is for this reason that the program or the way forward that was articulated by the co-chairperson is very crucial, very important. But it does not take away the responsibility of Parliament of in terms of the two committees conducting oversight as their responsibilities, but at the same time taking along this way forward that was suggested by the co-chairpersons as they were winding up the meeting. Basically, the core, the most important areas of focus that we agreed need to be taken forward in the next 6 months. Now, I must emphasize this, Chairperson, as I wind up my closing remarks. It's going to be very critical to find a way of taking provinces along with us. It can never be the issue of the national parliament and national department of health and treasury, national treasury, playing the big brother or big sister to the provinces. We must take them along with us because they are our equals. If we want this to succeed over the next 6 months, we must work with the provinces in good faith and in the spirit of being equal and in the spirit of intergovernmental relations and intergovernmental fiscal relations. Going to be critical. I also want to thank the FFC for their input this morning. Always very passionate about issues that we ask them to give us input on. But thank you very much. I want to thank also the Rural Health Advocacy representative. We value your input. I heard that there was one other independent person who was here out of sheer interest and on health issues. In his absence, if he's gone, we want to thank him as well, and everybody else who has participated in this very important conversation, on not only on behalf of these two committees, but on behalf of Parliament itself. And I'm saying this because it's important to say that it is Parliament which is taking these issues very seriously through its committees. Thank you very much.
Well, therefore, thank you, Honourable Queen, just for your interest. The story on the vehicle. Okay. Firstly, we have received information on the progress made by the Department, National Department of Health, on the vehicle legal. I think let's read it, because earlier on we didn't have the information, so we said we need the department to do something. And then it then so happened that we then discovered that they've already started working on this. But it's also important, our voice is also important in putting pressure so that there can be an action that will yield positive results. But then for your interest, the story on the medical legal is carried in the Sowetan this morning. That's the impact of your work. See? That's why I say, come pretend there's no impact. You ask, what have you achieved? But now, at least first impact is already there, because we make noise about this thing, even though the culprits will be careful, you know, because then there's trouble coming also to them. Thank you very much. Wow, what an interesting
what time, Eddie?
Thank you.
Check 1, 2.